The pilot of the Enola Gay has passed away. Boeing may do things differently next time. And the FAA says runway incursions are down. This is Aero News. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for downloading this AeroCast. Here's what's up in aviation for Friday, November 2nd, 2007. No matter how you feel about the first nuclear weapon dropped on Japan to end World War II, it was undeniably a watershed event in the history of warfare and of mankind. U.S. Air Force Brigadier General retired Paul Warfield Tibbets, Jr. led the mission that dropped that bomb, called Little Boy, on Hiroshima on August 6, 1945. As a result, he spent the last 67 years as a focus of nuclear protesters. On Thursday, Tibbets died at his home in Columbus, Ohio, at the age of 92. The Columbus Dispatch reports he had suffered several small strokes and heart failure in recent years. 3 days after that first bomb, a second was dropped on Nagasaki. One day after that, Japan surrendered and the war was over. On the 60th anniversary of the event, Tibbets told the Dispatch, quote, "I knew when I got the assignment it was going to be an emotional thing. We knew it was going to kill people right and left. But my one driving interest was to do the best job I could so that we could end the killing as quickly as possible," unquote. At least 70,000 people are thought to have died instantly after that bomb was dropped from the B-29 called Enola Gay, named after Tibbets' mother. He maintained that the bomb saved possibly tens of thousands of American lives. Quote, "I sleep clearly every night," unquote. When it was discovered a planned 50th anniversary exhibit of the restored Enola Gay at the Smithsonian had an agenda focusing on the suffering caused by the bomb and downplaying the brutality of the enemy, the then 80-year-old Tibbets was prominent in a protest by veterans. As a result, the fuselage was displayed in 1995 without the commentary. Tibbets spent most of his life defying protesters who sought him out. Defiant to the end, he's reportedly asked to be cremated, his ashes scattered over the English Channel, and that there be no headstone anywhere to serve as a gathering point for protesters. Back when the Snohomish County, Washington Economic Development Council scheduled Mike Baer to address its members, he was head of Boeing's 787 Dreamliner development program. Despite the recent announcement by Boeing that the plane will be 6 months late and Baer's subsequent reassignment to business strategy and marketing 2 weeks ago, the Seattle Times reported he still showed up for the speaking engagement. And what he had to say probably has county economic development officials giddy. Baer suggested that Boeing may reconsider its global supply strategy, often blamed for Dreamliner delays. In the past, Boeing has engineered its own products, but outsourced some construction. For the Dreamliner, some of the design work was outsourced too, and it hasn't always worked out. Quote, "Some of these guys we won't use again. Some of them proved incapable of doing it," unquote. Baer predicted that for the company's next big project, thought to be a replacement for the popular but aging 737, Boeing may actually bring much of the process closer to home. Quote, "The right way to do this would be to have all those big parts across the street, so you could just roll them in. We'll see on the next airplane programs whether we can accomplish something like that," unquote. Baer declined to speculate whether "across the street" was a literal term, or whether Boeing expansion might happen outside Washington State. The Federal Aviation Administration proclaimed this week it exceeded its own goal for reducing the most serious runway incursions by 25% in fiscal year 2007. There were 24 serious incursions in more than 61 million operations, or one incursion for every 2.5 million operations. The goal was no more than one for every 2 million surface movements. The agency credits better training, clearer signs, and new procedures, but says much is left to do. As ANN reported, last month the FAA adopted the definition for a runway incursion used by the International Civil Aviation Organization, in which any unauthorized runway encroachment, regardless of possible conflict with another aircraft, is an incursion, and that may require a few asterisks in the press release next year. The state of Georgia already boasts a thriving aviation manufacturing industry, but it grew a little more on Thursday. 3 months after acquiring the type certificate for the plane once known as the Grumman Tiger, True Flight Holdings LLC announced that it will build a $3.5 million manufacturing facility at the Valdosta Regional Airport. The plant will occupy 14 acres, with an option to expand on 11 more. VP and COO Lloyd Montague says a key to the company's plan to control costs will be keeping more of its manufacturing in-house. The Tiger was last built by Tiger Aircraft Company, which was liquidated in Chapter 7, but did manage to get the Garmin G1000 avionics certified for the Tiger. The new owners will offer the plane in a wide range of option levels, starting with a basic VFR model. Up next on ANN, NASA adjusts Discovery schedule again. Southwest and its pilots negotiate quietly. And U.S. Airways offers veteran flight attendants a buyout. You're listening to Aero News.
Uncramp your style in a new Citation CJ2 Plus from Cessna. Now with integrated ProLine 21 avionics, FADEC, and a restyled cockpit and cabin. In the CJ2 Plus, you'll carry more payload than you could in the original CJ2. You'll climb and cruise faster. You'll have the freedom to use even shorter runways. And you'll do it all on less fuel. For a sure thing, call 1-800-4-CESSNA.
We're back with more of your Aero Briefing for November 2nd, 2007. On the web, you can find us at www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Mission managers at NASA have once again delayed a planned spacewalk to address issues with the International Space Station's power generating systems. NASA says a fourth spacewalk during the current Discovery mission has been moved to Saturday. A fifth spacewalk will now wait till after Discovery undocks from the ISS on Monday. On Wednesday, ISS program managers changed the priority of the fourth spacewalk from inspection of a rotary joint to repair of a torn solar array. Engineers on the ground are still working to determine why that panel tore and exactly how to fix it. On Thursday, the shuttle and station crews continued spacewalk preparations and transfer activities and enjoyed some off-duty time. They also spoke with former President George H.W. Bush and First Lady Barbara Bush in a teleconference from Johnson Space Center in Houston. Southwest Airlines and its pilots are demonstrating that serious, high-stakes contract negotiations can happen without public drama. The pilots turned down a one-year contract extension in August last year, and the resulting talks continue today. Pilots at Southwest are already the highest paid in the industry, and wages have increased 50% just since 2000. Their salaries now average $166,000 a year. Over the same period, competing airlines have slashed labor costs in bankruptcy proceedings, and Southwest has lost much of the competitive advantage it used to enjoy through futures contracts on jet fuel. The result is increased pressure on the company to control its own labor costs. Much rides on the outcome of the talks between the company and the Southwest Airlines Pilots Association. Whatever the contract looks like will no doubt be used as a template next year when negotiations start with flight attendants, customer service reps, and other employees at Southwest. Meanwhile, over at U.S. Airways, management reportedly plans to offer a buyout to up to 314 East Coast-based flight attendants. The Arizona Republic reports the measure is tied to the airline's previously announced closure of Pittsburgh's crew base, but FAs throughout the airline's network can apply. To qualify, flight attendants must have at least 15 years seniority from the former pre-America West merger U.S. Airways as of October 3rd. The package includes a $20,000 lump sum, travel benefits, and other perks. The Association of Flight Attendants had hoped for better terms, but AFA President Mike Flores said the union's Master Executive Council decided the good outweighed the bad in voting unanimously to accept the offer. The buyout is intended to cut U.S. Airways employee costs by eliminating higher paid positions. It's cheaper for the airline to hire and train new workers than it is to pay the salaries of those who have been on the job for 15 years. Those of us who live primarily in the general aviation world may not be familiar with the term FOQA, but it's one we'll need to learn. FOQA is an acronym, F-O-Q-A. It stands for Flight Operational Quality Assurance. FOQA is used by the airlines to analyze recorded flight data in an effort to identify, assess, and correct high-risk operating conditions before they can cause an accident. It's one reason U.S. airlines achieve their impressive safety records. And the reason we're going to all have to learn it is that Eclipse Aviation has adopted the process for the Eclipse 500 Very Light Jet. Company President Vern Rayburn says going beyond what's expected is a daily imperative at Eclipse. Quote, Foqua is a perfect addition to our progressive safety management system, which gives us the tools to proactively ensure the highest level of safety across all Eclipse 500 operations, unquote. The move by Eclipse was made possible by new capabilities of its state-of-the-art avionics. Eclipse is the first manufacturer to get FAA approval for Foqua. Previous systems have been developed and implemented by airlines. Boeing is working on a system which will allow a higher level of connectivity between future airliners and airline maintenance operators. Still ahead, it's all part of the job for a CAL FIRE pilot. A pilot who should know better flunks a breathalyzer test. And Avemco has a new president. You're listening to Aero News.
Welcome to Cirrus Design. Maker of the world's best-selling personal aircraft, the sleek SR-22. Cirrus planes feature the latest technologies and are equipped with an exclusive, life-saving parachute system. It is our mission to make personal aviation safe, affordable, and convenient. At Cirrus, we offer a test drive like no one else in the business.
Shoot happens. Come on, you know it does. Even the world's top test pilots know there are in-flight situations you can't always recover from. Mid-air collision, control failure, pilot incapacitation. In severe emergencies, do what the world's top test pilots do. Use a parachute. Except, instead of having to bail out of a moving aircraft, you can have the safety of a BRS full airframe recovery parachute. BRS has parachutes for an enormous variety of aircraft, from experimental to light sport, and all the way to retrofits on certified airplanes. Shoot happens. Will you be ready when it does? Call BRS today at 651-457-8651 or visit us online at brsparachutes.com.
We're back to wrap up your Aero Briefing for Thursday, November 2nd, 2007. I'm Paul Plack. Mike Wagstaff says he was just doing his job when he flew his helicopter into blinding smoke from the California wildfires last month. Wagstaff is a U.S. Forest Service contract pilot employed by Kachina Aviation. He was dispatched to the Harris Fire near the U.S.-Mexico border October 21st. He dropped off a crew of seven firefighters to dig containment lines, then started picking up water from a nearby pond to drop on the flames. Just after noon, the crew encountered a burnover and was trapped by the flames. CAL FIRE Chief Ray Cheney sent pilots to find and rescue four firefighters and one civilian immediately. Wagstaff correctly theorized the missing people were just behind the head of the fire. He made two flights into the area and was able to rescue four firefighters and an injured teen whose father had died trying to save the family's home. Two of the four firefighters and the 15-year-old are still in critical condition in the burn unit at UCSD Medical Center in Hillcrest. Wagstaff hasn't been able to visit the people he rescued. He's still fighting the wildfires. But he has made a point to get daily updates on their conditions. A guy who probably should have known better is in hot water in Mitchell, South Dakota, after allegedly flying drunk. Mitchell police tell the Associated Press they arrested 65-year-old Robert Paulus after he landed Tuesday at the Mitchell Municipal Airport. Air traffic controllers told police Paulus was flying erratically and slurring his speech. WJDB Radio reported a breathalyzer test indicated well over the .08 threshold for DUI. Adding insult to injury, Paulus is a retired pharmacist and the chairman of the Flora, Illinois Airport Authority. Police say they found several bottles of prescription pills on board the plane, pills for which Paulus reportedly had no prescriptions, and an open bottle of liquor. His pilot certificate has been suspended, pending an FAA investigation. Paulus told police he was in South Dakota on a pheasant hunting trip. Avemco Insurance Company announced on Thursday that Jim Lauerman has been promoted to president of the company. Lauerman served as executive VP for insurance operations and chief underwriting officer of Avemco before the promotion. He started his career at National Aviation Underwriters in 1985. Since then, he served in several positions, including vice president of underwriting at U.S. Specialty Insurance Company, which is a sister company of Avemco. Lauerman couples his 22 years of aviation insurance experience with 35 years in general aviation. He holds an ATP certificate with multi-engine CFII ratings, over 4,000 hours, and over 2,000 hours of instruction given. As for his plans now, Lauerman said, quote, We will be deepening our support of aviation-related endeavors that serve general aviation, including the ARRI Research Project, the Build a Plane Organization, and Jamal Larkin's Dream Launch Tour, unquote. Avemco Insurance Company is headquartered in Frederick, Maryland, and has insured planes and pilots since 1961. And finally, assuming you make it, how will you celebrate your 100th birthday? Will you gather the great-grandkids and regale them with tales of the old days when some airplanes still had pistons? Have Willard Scott announce your birthday on the Today Show? Splurge and get the cherry Metamucil? Well, a British grandmother chose to celebrate her 100th birthday on Tuesday by becoming the world's oldest paraglider. The London Daily Mail reports Peggy McAlpine made a tandem leap with an instructor off a 2,500-foot peak in Cyprus 20 years after she bungee-jumped with the Royal Parachute Regiment to celebrate her 80th birthday. Quote, "It was the most wonderful, pleasant experience, and I'm ready to do it again anytime. I love heights. I love climbing. I love getting up in the air. I hope to do this again when I'm 105, but this might be my final goodbye to all my flying escapades," unquote. Two volunteers monitored McAlpine's flight to verify it for the Guinness Book of Records. The jump broke the old record, previously held by a 95-year-old Dane. Up till now, the oldest British citizen to paraglide was 91-year-old Reg Rose Innes, who flew for 20 minutes last December. McAlpine's daughter, Elizabeth Forsyth, watched her mother apprehensively from the safety of the landing spot near the Cyprus coast. Elizabeth is afraid of heights. She's still young. She'll grow out of it. And that's the latest from Aero News. Remember to check out the ANN special feature. Today, my guest is Fred DeLue, president of Big Sky Airlines. The carrier just started service between Plattsburgh and Boston on Wednesday for Delta. And I'll talk with Fred about the role of regionals in today's airline industry. And if you haven't gotten around to it yet, subscribe to our AeroCasts. Find them on iTunes, Yahoo, Odeo, and at our website, www.aero-news.net. I'm Paul Plack. Thanks for listening. Have a clear and unlimited day.